Hello, this is Wendy Bauer, reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 17th, 2015. We will begin today's reading with the article captioned Decatur City Council to Name First Female Mayor Tonight, coming from the local government and politics page. The Decatur City Council is expected to name Julie Moore Wolf as mayor tonight and begin the process of searching for someone to fill her seat on the council. Council members met in closed session last week to discuss filling the vacancy created by the July 17th death of Mayor Mike McElroy. They directed City Manager Tim Gleason to prepare a resolution naming Moore Wolf, which appears on the agenda for tonight's meeting, immediately followed by her swearing in. It is believed that Moore Wolf would be the city's first female mayor. Councilman Jerry Dawson is expected to be appointed mayor pro tem. Later in the evening, the council is expected to recess to a closed session to discuss filling the council spot. State law gives the council up to 60 days to make that appointment. Gleason said there is definite interest in the community, and he believes the council will have a pool of qualified candidates from which to choose. The recent municipal election in April adds another layer of complexity to the decision. 6 people ran for the 3 council spots, and 2 candidates who ran for Decatur mayor also do not hold seats on the council. I definitely think that that's going to be a discussion point for the entire council, Gleason said. How do they approach this? Do they identify an area that they think they're weak within the existing council and seek out that person? Is there preferential treatment given to people who ran in the last council election? Or, Gleason said, the council could go in a different direction and avoid the appearance of giving any preferential treatment. There's a couple of past council members who have said they would be interested in coming back and have no interest in running in 2017, he said. Arguably, in that scenario, council has not selected somebody who might have an upper hand for that 2017 election, where they're getting some name recognition over the course of the next 18-19 months. Gleason said anyone who is interested can submit letters of interest to his and the mayor's offices, which are located on the 3rd floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. From Decatur, mother charged with endangering life of newborn. A mother who abandoned her newborn baby at Decatur Memorial Hospital in April was arrested Friday and charged with endangering the life or health of the child. Police said Illinois law allows mothers to abandon babies without punishment at places such as hospitals and police and fire stations. The reports in this case say that other actions the 23-year-old Moroa mother took affected the baby boy and led to the charge. An article written by Huey Freeman, staff writer for the Herald and Review, captioned Decatur Native Takes NYFD's Big Pictures, starts with a photograph of the New York City skyline with a caption, New York City skyline with beacons representing World Trade Center disaster in which 343 firefighters lost their lives. Katie Clements is back on the streets of New York. Clements, whose first job with the New York Fire Department was working on an ambulance as an emergency medical technician, recently became a photographer and photo editor for the department. I love photography, Clements, a Decatur native, said in a phone interview. My mother was a watercolor painter. I had a good eye growing up as an artist's daughter. Clements, 51, who moved up the ladder from EMT to executive assistant to the fire commissioner during her 15 years with one of the world's high-profile firefighting forces, decided last year that she needed to get out of the office. When her longtime boss, Salvatore Cassano, was about to retire as commissioner in 2014, Clements went to the media services department to ask if they had any open positions. She was told they needed someone to organize the department's photo archives, more than 1 million images. However, there had not been a position created to tackle that task. When Clements talked with Cassano on the subject, he agreed that a photo editor position was needed. Before he retired, he created that position, Clements said, adding that he helped her land a job that she loves. Clements, who began with the department September 11, 2000, and as administrative assistant to chief of operations, worked for Cassano from the day he took that job after the 9/11 terrorist attacks the following year. She stayed with him as he advanced to fire chief and commissioner, the department's top two positions. Fire Chief Peter Gansey, who recommended Clements for advancement from EMT to a position with the command staff, died on 9/11 when the World Trade Center North Tower collapsed. He was one of 343 firefighters who died that day, including many of Clements' friends. Clements said firefighters feel the impact today in everything they do, including training and how scenes are assessed and commanded. Another impact of 9/11 is how the department deals with families who have died from duty-related illnesses or injuries, Clements said. There is a whole unit now dedicated to helping the families of any department member that dies. That union didn't exist before 9/11. Clements, who credits her parents with instilling her strong work ethic, is one of the department's three full-time photographers. She shoots firefighters battling blazes, as well as promotions, graduations, and other department ceremonies. There's always something going on, Clements said, adding that for big incidents, a photographer is assigned to ride to the scene with emergency lights and sirens along with a public information officer. A photo she shot of a blaze in a five-story building in Lower Manhattan on March 26th made the cover of an issue of With New York Firefighters, a trade publication Clements had been enjoying for years. Clements is also called on to photograph the funerals of active duty firefighters, as well as ceremonies in which they are honored after their deaths. A year after they pass away, the families are invited back to the stations, Clements said, adding that there have been many cases of cancer related to recovery efforts in the rubble of the World Trade Center. They are beautiful ceremonies with plaques posted at the firefighters' workplaces, so their loved ones will always be remembered. Clements said, I take photographs of the ceremonies for the family in case they want to have those photos. It is an emotional event and very meaningful for the families. Her recent assignments have included shooting the victory parade for the U.S. women's national soccer team after it won the World Cup on July 5th, and a parade to celebrate the department's 150th anniversary. The parades are great to photograph because of the consistently warm reception from the crowd to the department members, Clements said. The members march to engage with the community, and the community loves it. For me, there is a lot of walking backwards to capture our members walking the parade route. It's a lot of work, but fun work. She also drove and rode in one of FDNY vehicles in a motorcade from New York to the National Museum of the U.S. Marine Corps, Quantico, Virginia, to present steel from the wreckage of the World Trade Center as part of a 9/11 memorial at the museum. There were about 500 motorcycles in the caravan, Clements said. We rode alongside the flatbed truck carrying the steel. I videotaped as fire companies saluted from every overpass in the city limits. The grounds of the Marine Museum are gorgeous. As if there was not enough on her plate, last fall she was asked to take on the task of serving as photo editor for a book, FDNY 150, celebrating the past, present, and future. The 96-page volume, published by the FDNY Foundation, contains hundreds of photos and stories tracking the department's illustrious history. The book points out that the worst loss of life of city firefighters before the 9/11 tragedy occurred in 1996, when 12 firefighters perished in a building collapse. Clements found vintage photographs for the book, including one of firefighters shooting streams of water into the Triangle Shirtwaist Company building in 1911, a blaze in which 146 people lost their lives, mostly young female factory employees. This tragedy led to law changes nationwide regarding fire safety at workplaces. A photograph of 32 women at the FDNY Fire Academy, taken in 1982, shows members of the first class of female firefighters to be sworn in by the department. Another photograph pertinent to Clemens' career shows EMS and fire department officers conversing at a fire scene shortly after the department took over ambulance operations in 1996. The man who oversaw that merge of services 19 years ago was Daniel Nigro, Clements' first boss in 2000 when he was chief of operations. He has served as the city's fire commissioner since 2014. Gansey, Nigro's close friend, recommended Clements for her original office position after hearing her deliver a moving speech about her recently deceased mother at her Emergency Medical Technician Academy graduation ceremony. Nigro wrote the introduction to FDNY 150, in which he says his great-great-grandfather served as a volunteer firefighter in Greenwich Village at the time the first paid department in the city was established in 1965. Nigro's father joined the department at the end of World War II. The book was a fascinating project, Clements said. To view so many amazing photos of the department's history was quite an honor. It gave me a sense that even with all the technological advances, firefighting is still about brave people moving toward danger and difficulty to help other people. During her years of working with the command staff, which brought her into contact with media services, Clements thought the photographers, videographers, had the best gig in the world. I just wanted to work in that environment. It's a real creative bunch of people. That seemed so appealing to me, said Clements, who moved to New York in 1986 to test her skills as a musician. One of the great things about the job is being out from behind the desk. The other part is being at the desk organizing the archive. A perfect balance. It's nice to have a balance of really active work and sit-down, focused work. An article from Blue Mound, written by Ryan Voiles, a Herald and Review staff writer. Blue Mound must reopen police issue. The current law enforcement system in Blue Mound will remain as officials and residents react to a recent Illinois Attorney General's Office ruling on the controversial dissolution of the village's police department. Several months after the village decided to dissolve its police department and have the Macon County Sheriff's Office provide law enforcement, the Attorney General's Office decided last week the village violated the Open Meetings Act while crafting the plan. Along with a correction to future meeting practices, the decision said the board must revisit the police decision while taking public input. Macon County Sheriff Thomas Schneider, whose deputies assuming policing in the village last month, said his office will abide by the agreement passed by the county board to provide law enforcement in the village until told otherwise. This does not change anything that we're doing, Schneider said. We just want to provide the best service we can for the people of the village. Village board members could not be reached for comment. The board had unanimously approved a contract in May with the sheriff's office to provide one deputy and necessary equipment to the area, with additional patrols available 24 hours a day. With the plan in place, the village board dissolved its police department. The former police chief was let go in July, and another officer will continue until the contract expires next year. The decision and the process created a heated situation in the community, with petitions passed around and created online to restore the department. A complaint was filed with the Attorney General's office shortly after the contract was approved to determine whether the public had proper opportunity to weigh in on the decision. Village board members had said they were allowed to discuss the issue in closed session because it was a personnel issue involving staff, and countered that the plan could save the village of a little more than 1,100 residents thousands of dollars a year. But according to the Attorney General's ruling, the board violated the Open Meetings Act by taking up service contracts during their closed session, which is against the order that governs what public bodies can discuss in public or private sessions. And an article by Teresa Churchill, senior writer at Herald and Review, United Way Day of Action has 27 projects this year. There is a sidebar that if you go, it is the 6th annual Day of Action by the United Way of Decatur in Mid-Illinois. It is Friday and Saturday, August 21st and 22nd in the Decatur area. And if you wish to volunteer, visit www.uwdecatur.org or call 217-422-8537. And the article from Decatur: staff and volunteers with the American Red Cross want to equip as many Decatur homes with a smoke detector as they can. So the chapter, serving South Central Illinois, is among four new organizations putting a project on the list for the 6th annual Day of Action next weekend by the United Way of Decatur in Mid-Illinois. Pam Tisch, volunteer specialist with the Red Cross, is hoping 30 people will join the agency's 10 regular volunteers to fan out in teams of three to install 50 smoke detectors Friday morning. One person will install the device, a second will document the work, and a third will speak with the recipient about other fire safety steps he or she can take. "We put up 47 on Decatur's west side earlier this year," Tisch said. "We just want to save lives." Also new to Day of Action are beautification projects for the Children's Museum of Illinois and American Legion Post 105, and organizing a student binder for Richland Community College's Adult Education Program, all on Friday. Day of Action became a two-day event after the first one in 2010, with the bulk of the projects shifting over the years from Saturday to Friday. James Keith, Community Impact Director for the United Way, said 13 of the 27 projects lined up this year could still use volunteers. "We need 194 more people to get to the 500 needed," he said. About 400 of the volunteers already signed up are Millikan University students, set to complete community service hours the weekend before classes begin, August 24th. The United Way also plans to kick off its 2015 fundraising campaign at 10 a.m. Saturday during a Day of Action beautification project at Scoville Zoo. The 2014 campaign raised $1.5 million for 21 partner agencies serving Macon County. And an article by Valerie Wells from Decatur: Holy Family hires first lay principal. For the first time in its 54-year history, Holy Family School has a lay principal. Debbie Alexander retired from the Decatur School District and roles as a teacher, principal, central office administrator, and director of community engagement, is a member of the parish and the new principal. "The school's been redone," said Hannah Hollis, a seventh grader. "We have everything painted and the floors redone and everything. It's kind of interesting because our school is 54 years old and Mrs. Alexander is our first principal who is not a nun, ever. Sisters Janet and Jerome are still with the parish," Alexander said, "and are available to work with the school if needed. But Principal Sister Geraldine Kemper retired last spring." "I am a member of the parish and I am Catholic," Alexander said. "I am truly devoted and this is my mission. As a Catholic, it's such an honor to be here in that role, serving as the first lay principal in 54 years. It's just my dream come true." Alexander calls it God's perfect timing that Kemper would choose to retire from Holy Family the same spring that she retired from public education. During her years in the public schools, Alexander was a single mother. "I needed to ensure that I was able to provide for my family, but this is something I've always dreamed of doing," she said. Many changes are on tap for Holy Family under Alexander's leadership. Middle school students are getting Chromebooks, and the staff will guide them in learning to use the internet wisely. Alexander said she plans to make sure the students understand that even if they delete something, it's out there in cyberspace forever, so they will need to make good decisions. Some of their textbooks will be entirely on the devices, but she's also planning a technology academy, robotics, and other enrichment courses. We still believe in books and pencils and paper, she said, very much so. They also believe in health and wellness. When the money is raised, a walking path will be built on school grounds. Volunteers already have committed to stocking a healthy snack basket to be kept in the hallway. Another new initiative is academies devoted to different tracks: science, math, college and career planning, leadership, music and performance. Caitlin Jedlicka can't wait for the Music and Performance Academy to start. She's a member of the band, and the students will perform Lion King. We'll start with the books in our hands and practice until we don't need them, Caitlin said. And a story from Forsyth, written by Tony Reed, staff writer for the Herald and Review. Police help kids track down supplies. Photograph of a very happy little girl with an adult man carrying cute pink clothes. Captioned, Helen Rankins, who celebrated her third birthday Sunday, sets off in a gleeful pursuit of back-to-school bargains with Decatur Deputy Police Chief Cody Moore providing financial backup. Back-to-school shopping is so much more fun when you have a police escort. More than 70 children got the VIP treatment Sunday morning in the Shop with a Cop back-to-school program. Kohl's store in Forsyth's Hickory Point Mall opened early, just for them. Excited students from pre-kindergarten through sixth grade found donuts waiting for them outside and their personal Decatur police officer waiting on the inside, ready to spend $100 on school clothes, shoes, and accessories. The $7,000 bill was paid for in fundraisers organized by the Police Benevolent and Protective Association, Decatur Unit 39, made up of active and retired Decatur police officers. The children shopping Sunday were recommended as deserving of help by either the Decatur School District or Big Brothers Big Sisters of Macon County. The result was a hectic swirl of shopping activity as police officers, often hand-in-hand with their students, used the long arm of the law to nab the latest fashion trends. Some, such as Deputy Chief of Police Cody Moore, were naturals at this. Moore, who has young grandchildren, is well-versed in the most wanted TV and movie character brands. "It's been a while since I did young kids' school shopping, but I know everybody who is popular," he said with a grin. His 3-year-old partner, Helen Rankins, didn't have any complaints as they prowled for bargains. Helen's mom, Kelsey, said the experience was a gift to treasure. "I think it is excellent and it's helping families that need it," she said. "Christmas has come 4 months early." Kids and moms, weighed down with bulging bags, emerged from the store to be presented with new backpacks, courtesy of the Decatur YMCA. They didn't take long to fill them with notebooks and class supplies provided through a contribution from Kroger. Kohl's also had a table filled with soft toys and books, also donated for the occasion. Detective Scott Rosenberry, Police Association president, said the Shop with a Cop Christmas program has been going strong for at least 20 years, but the back-to-school version is only in its second year. He said it was created because officers saw there was an unmet need. "And it's great for us to be able to have this positive influence on these kids and interact with them in a different setting than when we're out on the street," said Rosenberry, 30. From Shelbyville, article written by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review, Shelby County faces 9/11 deadline. After years as one of the final 7 counties in Illinois not to have an enhanced 911 emergency phone service, Shelby County is under a deadline to adopt the system. "We have until July 1, 2016 to submit a plan to the state," Shelby County Sheriff Don Kuntz said. "The clock is ticking." Kuntz said new legislation requires the entire state to have enhanced 911 by 2017. Shelby County currently contracts with Coles County to provide basic 911 service through a call forwarding arrangement. Local 911 calls are routed to Coles County, which then contacts the Shelby County Sheriff's dispatcher. The statewide overhaul of the 911 systems is designed to shorten emergency response times and bring 911 services to the downstate counties now without them. Shelby County pays $101,000 a year to Coles County for the service. Kuntz said starting from scratch with 911 would cost more than $500,000. Shelby County is looking at consolidation with another county to provide the service. Undersheriff Rob McCall said that a consolidation would have some initial costs to allow for direct dispatching, but that some of the cost would be covered by an 87-cent surcharge for all telephone customers mandated by the state. The counties without enhanced 911 will be the first to receive those funds, he said. The state is urging us to consolidate with an existing system, and we've met with Christian County to talk about it. McCall said Christian County's computer system is advanced enough to absorb Shelby County's calls without much additional cost. There would be some software on our part, and we're asking for a seat on the board, he said, but we're willing to talk to anyone in the area to make this work. And a story from Decatur, early in the morning of August 17th. Attic fire damages Decatur family home. A home was damaged by a fire Saturday night that broke out in the attic. Firefighters were called to 1857 East William Street at 11:27 p.m. The family living there escaped as smoke poured from the attic space. Crews quickly knocked down the fire but spent several hours on scene making sure the 1.5-story house was secure. Damage is estimated at $1,000, and the family is understood to be staying with relatives. The cause of the blaze is listed as officially undetermined. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, August 17th, 2015. Please stay tuned.